Good morning. Today, I will talk about spirituality, out beyond the confines of the rational, about the skeptic that exists in each of us, and then there's the child, yearning to understand it all. A child can be filled with the sense of wonder. Or a skeptic, or a mystic, or a spiritualist. In our daily lives, we may be any one or all. Reverend McGee says that those new to our church usually are surprised that those who are skeptics or do not believe in the existence of God are embraced as fellow spiritual sojourners. But our conviction is that personal religion is defined by deeds, not creeds, by what we do in the world more than what we believe, and how we reach out with compassion to those who suffer. But we also recognize that it does matter what you believe. In the words of Sophia Lyon Foss, the great Unitarian Universalist religious educator for whom our preschool room is named, some beliefs are like walled gardens. They encourage exclusiveness and the feeling of being especially privileged. Other beliefs are expansive and lead the way into wider and deeper sympathies. In our fellowship, we encourage expansive beliefs. We have no dogma or creed that requires a set of beliefs shut off behind walls. Instead, we urge each person to build a belief system upon the foundation of their own personal experiences, reason, and wisdom of their ages. An individual spiritual path is one to be explored. Frank Hall says that spirituality is a poetic term. It's not about being irrational or anti-intellectual, but it's about freeing oneself from being tied down to the purely rational, the intellectual. It's a delicate balance. As a master, skepticism is a tyrant and moves from healthy doubt to full-blown cynicism, dismissing the possibility of human dignity, assuming that everyone is motivated by selfishness. As a master, spirituality is a tyrant, oppressing us with the idea that all our thoughts should be elevated, that we should live fully in the here and now, every moment. We cherish our ability to question, to doubt. We embrace the use of reason, even in our religious understandings. We need to hold on to a healthy skepticism, aware that it can go too far. That is the beauty of a child. They ask their questions to quench their thirst for the time being. They make up their minds, form ideas, and their reasonings take shape. We will explore the spiritual, the skeptic, and the child that exists in each of us, manifesting in one form at a particular moment in one time in our lives. Robert Frost has a little poem that invites us to go from the usual, normal, day-to-day things on our schedule to take a kind of Sabbath break. His poem is called The Pasture. I'm going out to clean the pasture spring. I'll only stop to rake the leaves away and wait to watch the water clear. I may. I shan't be gone long. You come too. I'm going out to fetch the little calf that's standing by its mother. It's so young, it totters when she licks it with her tongue. I shan't be gone long. You come too. Reverend Hall says we invite children to listen to stories by saying, "Once upon a time." It's not really an invitation to look into the past, but to get out of this time, this here and now time, not to be time bound. It's an invitation to go into the realm of imagination. You come too. The pasture spring represents a source of spiritual nourishment that we all need. Sometimes it gets clogged up with leaves. The leaves symbolize all the things that get in the way of that inner peace or inspiration we need. The worries, disappointments, fears, and anxieties clog up the spring and need to be cleaned away. We could begin our Sunday morning meditation with an invitation saying, I invite you to join me in the spirit of meditation, prayer, and reflection. That gives you a choice. Some choose to call it meditation. Others are comfortable calling it prayer. And some would choose neither meditation nor prayer. But we all are in reflection, quiet thinking. The celebrant could say, I won't be gone long. You come too. Reverend Hall says the skeptic in us and the skeptics among us tend to put all the eggs in one basket. We're a gathering of skeptics. A skeptic is one who doubts, one who observes. We all have some healthy skepticism, but of course it can go too far and turn to cynicism. Rumi wrote, the great religions are the ships, poets the lifeboats. Every sane person I know has jumped overboard. Perhaps the religions can be compared to a ferry that takes you across a stream. And once you are on the other side, you leave the boat. It has served its purpose. But the journey continues, and the journey is simply life. Sometimes we get inspiration and insight into the holy through children. A child, if left untouched, looks at life with a sense of wonder. According to Sophia Lyon Foss, children should be allowed to develop their own idea of God. She suggested delaying children's exposure to the Bible until they were ready for history generally. But she even suggested that children not be introduced to other people's idea of God until they had had an opportunity to begin to develop their own. And children do have their own ideas. In a time when many children thought that God looked like John Harms, This story from Carol Baxter has some interest. I will never forget Erin and Emily talking about God when they were 3 and 4. Erin asked Emily how big she thought God was. Emily quickly replied, he has to be very small because no one has ever seen him. A child's Bible studies can have interesting consequences, as in the story of a little girl who was talking to her teacher about whales. The little girl said that Jonah was swallowed by a whale. The teacher said it was physically impossible for a whale to swallow a human, because even though it was a very large mammal, its throat was very small. The little girl said, Jonah was swallowed by a whale. Irritated, the teacher reiterated that a whale could not swallow a human. It was physically impossible. The little girl said, when I get to heaven, I will ask Jonah. The teacher said, what if Jonah went to hell? The little girl replied, then you ask him. Then there's a story of a kindergarten teacher who was observing her classroom of children while they were drawing. She would occasionally walk around to see how the children were doing as they were drawing. As she got to one little girl who was working diligently, she asked what the drawing was. The little girl replied, "I'm drawing God." The teacher paused and said, "But no one knows what God looks like." Without missing a beat or looking up from her drawing, the little girl said, "They will in a minute." Can you see yourself in these examples? Have you been the skeptic, the spiritualist, or the child? Or are they the spiritual path of a child that needs to be nurtured and given room to grow with acceptance? Maybe many of you started out in life as I did in another church as a child. For myself, it was the Presbyterian Church in Wendell, Idaho. There I was taught that there was a God, that there was a heaven and a hell. My teacher taught me that God was male and looked like an old man with white hair and a beard. John Harms. He lived in heaven with all the other people from the Bible. I had pictured it quite literally. The desert world, the buildings, the golden gates in the clouds, even the palm trees. And then something happened to my vision of heaven. The space program. February 20th, 1962. I was 5. A man was sent into the heavens. John Glenn in Friendship 7. He circled the earth 3 times. And not once did he mention seeing the desert world of heaven. Nor God. Not one palm tree. I made up my mind then and there that my teacher had it wrong. I chose to form my own ideas and theology, if you will, that if there was a God, and I wasn't sold there was, that it wasn't in any one place and was possibly in everything, as the American Indians believed. I believed in Mother Nature. I much later learned that what I had formed in my mind as sacred to me had been in the teachings of Emerson. God enters by a private door into every individual, is the way that Emerson, a Unitarian and Transcendentalist, put it. Reverend Frank Hall said, "I would say that the spiritual aspect of life comes to every individual by a private door. But it is possible to bring that aspect of life into a shared space. This space, where our individuality is respected, while at the same time we acknowledge our need for community. Community with a shared purpose, a religious purpose, if you will. We don't need a set of creeds. We don't need dogma. We don't need to take a religious test to see if we pass. We need a set of principles. We need a sense of humility. We need a sense of appreciation. We need to believe in our capacity to nurture our deep spiritual life. The most important aspect of transcendentalism, the most important word to describe it," Frank says, "is the word intuition. Intuition is a way of knowing or understanding that it's outside the bounds of the usual way of thinking. It's a sensing or feeling of connectedness to that which is beyond our capacity to define or even to understand, but something each of us experiences in those brief moments of awe, when we stop to marvel at a sunset or a baby's features or the red, yellow, and bright orange leaves, or when we feel in touch with a loved one who is no longer alive but felt as a very real presence inside. It doesn't need to be an anthropomorphic God like the one Michelangelo painted on the Sistine Chapel, amazing and wonderful as that art is. The God of the Transcendentalists is not a physical person or being separate from creation, but infused in the entire creation. It's the life energy within each of us and part of every living thing. It's as much verb as noun." Reverend McGee says, "Some people think that an atheist contemplating theology is like a nudist browsing through the Spiegel catalog. Actually, theology is for everyone, even atheists. At its best, it isn't simply about whether God exists or not, or how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. God talk is about how each of us lives our life and experiences the sacred. One person may experience the world as being overseen by a supreme and absolute being. Another person may experience the love of a feminine deity. Another may feel the fiery presence of a savior. And then there are those who simply see life in snowflakes, roses, and setting suns. Get the point? Theology is for everyone. We are all theologians when we contemplate the nature of the universe and the meaning of life. For some of you, the concept of God has been stretched so far that, like a rubber band, it has finally snapped and set you free of divinity. For others, you are trying to leave the small God who tantalizes and terrifies and reinvent a new understanding of the sacred. I find the skeptic in me agreeing with Reverend McGee, who said, "In some ways, I believe God is the biggest scam ever perpetrated on humanity." In a recent interview with Neil Donald Walsh by Belief.net, Neil states that humanity is going to create a new God for itself in the next 25 to 30 years. And this new God will result in the emergence of a new spirituality on the planet. And the new spirituality will in turn result in, at last, a movement toward that time of peace and harmony for all humankind. He states the missing message in the world religions is that we are all one. That's what Unitarianism means, unity. And that's what Unitarian Universalism stands for. McGee points out that unity is the message of our principles. Our first principle affirms and promotes the inherent worth and dignity of every person, no matter the race, religion, nation, or sexual orientation. We are all one. The second principle protects that worth and dignity by affirming and promoting justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. And our third principle, the acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregation, makes it clear that though our religious journeys may be different in many ways, we are all on the same path to oneness and unity. McGee likes the New Yorker cartoon that he found that shows a man saying to the minister as he and his wife are leaving church, "Good sermon, Reverend, but all that God stuff, pretty far-fetched." God certainly is far-fetched for those whose spiritual journey excludes God. And God is certainly not a requirement for the spiritual journey. But for those of us who are seeking a new divinity, let us keep two things in mind. First of all, it's much easier to embrace our oneness when we are aware that any real spiritual journey begins in the desert places of our being. It's hard to cast stones at those who are different than us if we can see the tears in their eyes. This darkest time of year is a desert place that has been lit up with gaudy lights and kitchen appliances and game machines. But if we can find a way through the glitter into the darkness, we will find a passage into our most sustaining spirituality, whether we believe in God or not. And secondly, our spiritual journey grows out of our ability to see the holy, not as a thing or person, but as a window through which we gaze in order to envision the great mystery that encompasses all gods and all people and all life. Perhaps God is a path we are invited to take in order to delve down into the deeper dimensions of our being. Spirituality is not about belief. It's not about God. It's not about theology or an afterlife. It's not otherworldly. Though ideas about God, belief, and afterlife might help stimulate or support this thing we call spirituality. The kind of spirituality I mean is experienced by the skeptic, the agnostic, the atheist, as well as the believer. Many of our children have grown into fine young people. The young people, 7th grade through 9th grade, comprise a coming-of-age class that deal with the big questions. Why am I here? What is my purpose? Does God exist? What happens when we die? How can reflecting on our own eventual death inform the way we live today? What is the key to happiness? How has our religious and cultural heritage influenced our values? And how can we live our values? Our young people have their own answers to the big questions. Those answers are drawn from the living of a life, a childhood coming to a close that has been built on their experiences, spirituality with skepticism. As Joni Mitchell sang, "And I feel to be a cog in something turning. Well, maybe it's the time of year, or maybe it's the time of man. I don't know who I am. But you know, life is for learning. We are stardust, we are golden, and we've got to get ourselves back to the garden." Our faith is founded in experience, our childlike thirst for answers. The spiritualist reaches and seeks outside ourselves for the unanswerable questions, and the skeptic that we use to balance our knowledge. We must use all three to have any understanding of the spiritual throughout our lives. May this be a place where we are encouraged and challenged by our religious community to grow our spirituality out of the desert places of our lives.